This is Dave Fleming in the Ingenuity Lab. Leaders and managers are interested in performance, no doubt about it. They're interested in their own performance, and they're interested in the performance of people who they lead, people on their team, people in their organization. And part of what leaders and managers do is facilitate a process for improvement. At least good leaders and managers do this. The trouble is that the process leaders and managers use is often one-dimensional or too narrow. It either is centered around a one-time-of-the-year annual performance review, or the only conversations that ever occur are when something goes wrong with someone, they're not performing. And so this becomes a part of the culture at only a very surface level, instead of a really embedded part that's part of everyday execution. So today, I want to share with you how to embed a facilitated process, starting with the conversations you have and then adding processes to it, a conversational process that will allow you to embed your own facilitation of the development of the people who are on your team or in your organization. And this really has to start with me just kind of coming back to something I talk about a lot, and that is what I'm going to share today won't work unless it's practiced deliberately. So the principles, I think, can be helpful, but only if you can find a way to integrate them into your regular work as a leader with your team or your organization. If it's hit and miss, then the process, again, will become too narrow, too one-dimensional. So perhaps the first thing to really think about before I even share the process is, how do you make time and how do you alter time in order to infuse more of a conversational approach to continuous improvement with the people that you lead? So what meetings do you already have? What conversations do you already have that you could start to tweak a bit and insert some of the things I'm going to talk about today into your already existing time? And then there may be some other meetings or times that you want to add, but the first place to really look at how to be more deliberate is to alter what you're already doing, and then see if there's something that you should add that you can sustain that will also increase the effectiveness of your facilitation of continuous improvement in your organization, on your team. So I'm going to talk about three conversational steps that graduate to a bit more intensity each time you move to another one, that are all about helping facilitate continuous improvement with the people you lead. So here we go. First, let me give you the three graduated conversational actions, and then we'll talk about each one of them. Nudge, coach, correct. Nudge, coach, correct. Each one of these, you could almost think of them as ripples outward, or you know, a target with a bullseye and then going out. Not that the first one is the most important, but the one graduates to the other if you find the first one not working or not producing the results that you need. So nudge, coach, and correct are circles that move outward with both intensity and probably time length attached to it. Because a nudge is a real simple, brief conversation. A coaching session is a bit more time and energy invested. And then correction can actually become something that requires an organizational approach with HR involved. So each one of these graduates to a higher level of intensity. So let's talk about each one of them. Nudges are just everyday moments where you find either teachable moments or ripe moments to bring something to the surface or to the attention of someone you lead or the team that you lead that has to do with continuous improvement. So something's happening in the moment and you see almost a window opening and you say, ah, this would be a good time for me to nudge, add a comment or two about a particular area where we are trying to increase or better our performance. It's almost like the opportune moment meets the brief comment or two you're going to make, and you connect the two, you link the two in order to nudge people to a better place or give them something to think about or leave them with a question that will help them wrestle with how they could perform better based on the nudge that you gave them. So let's try to create an everyday scenario, and let me show you how you could use a nudge. You're walking down the hallway, and someone from your team is walking toward you, and you know, you do the casual, hey, where are you going, or what are you doing? And they say, oh, I'm about to go lead this meeting for Project X. And of course, you know what this is about. And you also know that you've been working with this person on improving clarity in their communication. They've talked to you about the desire to become more articulate and precise in the way that they share information. And so, with this new information that you've received walking down the hallway, you know they're going to a meeting, you know they're leading the meeting. You know they want to get better at articulating information with precision. Oh, man, the window has opened. It's time for a nudge. It's time for you to do something to bring back to them their desire to articulate with more precision. And so, man, there's a lot of ways you could do this. I bet you could just think of 3 or 4 or 5 or 10 right now. I mean, you could just make a very simple statement and keep moving. Articulate that information with precision and walk away. That would be a nudge. Because all you're wanting to do in that moment is bring back to mind what you've talked about with them in the past. So you could just nudge them with a simple statement. And there are so many statements that you could come up with. I mean, I just came up with one, but there would be so many ways you could get into that. You could ask them a question. You could look at them in the eyes and say, well, have you thought about precision in your articulation going into this meeting? And just smile at them. And again, it just draws it up. Or, I mean, if you have a minute and they happen to, say, have an agenda that they're walking to the meeting with, or, you know, you can take a minute to talk to them, say, you could ask a question like, so where's one place in this meeting where you really need to have precision in your articulation or in the information you're going to share? Or, you know, sometimes when I'm leading meetings, I find that I start out really well, but I start to get more vague as I get into the meeting. What about you? Where are you most concerned that you might be vague during the meeting? I mean, there are all kinds of ways to just nudge people to bring back to their recollection the things that you've talked about. Now, of course, I can only get so specific in my examples because I don't know your context or the people that you lead, but you do. And that's the beauty of a nudge. A well-timed nudge is like a tic-tac. It just refreshes the moment. It brings back some important information that you've already talked about. Okay, now, there's another kind of nudge. The second nudge is simply some piece of advice or a suggestion that truly emerges in the moment. And it's it's a piece of advice you want to give because you see something that could happen either with your team or, again, a particular person that you lead. So, for example, you're with your team and things are getting a little testy over an issue, but there's also some really good perspective taking coming out. You know, people are sharing different perspectives, but that's also causing some conflict. And you're starting to notice that the team is getting too focused on the negativity of the delivery rather than the good conflict that's bringing out the different perspectives. So you don't want to lose this moment, but you don't want it to go south either. So you might just nudge in a comment at that moment like, you know, we're onto something here, and our conflict can be good as long as we keep our conflict about finding the solution rather than tearing each other down. Let's stay on the solution side. Let's keep respecting each other. You could just say that. There's all kinds of ways, but basically what you're trying to do is something's veering off a little bit, and you just nudge it back. You nudge it back to a better place. Let's say that you've noticed in the last few meetings, Dave is making more sarcastic remarks when other people are talking, and it's creating a real deflating moment when it happens because people are sharing their view or sharing an idea and Dave is popping it. Even if Dave might have a point, the way in which he's going about it is creating it's de-energizing the team. And so after the meeting, you're walking down the hallway with Dave and you just say, you stop maybe and maybe a little bit of a dramatic pause, and I really mean that, and you look Dave in the eye and you say, you know, you have some really good ideas, Dave. And I really want to hear them, but not with the sarcastic tone. And then you're silent for 5 seconds. Not with the sarcastic tone. Now, you take a little bit of a risk there because Dave might say, what sarcastic tone? Dave might not think he's being sarcastic. So you have to know if someone's ready to hear that. But if they are, that can be a really good nudge. And then you just say, let's work on that, okay? And then walk away. These do not have to be long drawn out. In fact, they shouldn't be long drawn out conversations or lectures. They're little tic-tac sized sentences or two or three that, by giving them out in the opportune moment, you nudge people back to a better place of performance, or you nudge them on to a higher level of performance. Okay, I can only give general examples. You have to find the ones that would fit the context of your moment with your team in your organization, but you get the point. Little nudges, and man, these cost so little to do. You don't have to sit for a long period of time. You don't have to have a big coaching session. You're just nudging here and there. This is the ongoing, everyday, conversational way a leader can really facilitate improvement without it having to take a long time. Use the nudge. Use the nudge. Okay, the second conversational strategy or action you can take is a coaching session. You could argue that nudging is also coaching, but that's why I'm now going to say a coaching session. And a coaching session, just the way I would define it, is that it lasts at least 30 minutes, and it includes a few important elements that differentiate it from a nudge or a 5-minute conversation about improvement. So a coaching session, in my mind, has at least three movements that occur, three action phases that occur in the coaching session. First, there's time to reflect. Second, there's time to design. And third, there's time to support. So, or create support. So reflect, design, support. And this takes at least 30 minutes. I mean, I suppose you could probably do it in a little less time. But the point of a coaching session is actually to slow down a bit. Because you want to find a different rhythm with the person when you're having a coaching session than what can typically be more of the hurried approach that happens during the normal flow of a day. You know, you don't, in a lot of organizations, and this might not be true in yours, but in a lot of organizations, there's, you know, there's just not a lot of time every day to have protracted conversations about improvement. In some organizations, there is that time, but for many, there's not. But occasionally, or I should probably say consistently, I don't know what frequency you can make this happen in your culture, in your context, but with some consistent frequency, you should have coaching sessions with the people you lead, the people who are really in your circle. You know, not people that you lead if you lead an organization of 1,000 people, but let's say you have 5 direct reports, right? And they're really the people who are your primary team. You should have some consistent frequency, once a month, once a quarter, whatever it is, some consistent frequency where you're having a coaching session that's at least 30 minutes long, where you focus on reflecting, designing, and supporting. So let's talk about each of these phases for just a minute. By reflecting, I mean you slow down and you open up enough space to talk about an issue that you know you and the person you're talking to or your team, you know that the person you're talking to wants to improve in this area and you also want them to continue to get better in this area. Whatever that area is, you open up time to talk about that, to explore it from some different angles. So we could go back to the example we used when we were talking about nudging. The person who needs to get better at articulating information with precision. Okay, a coaching session would slow down. You're not trying to offer a nudge or a nugget. Instead, you're slowing down, and you might ask some reflective questions like, you know, what do you think it is that keeps you from more articulate language or precise language? Or when you think about leading a meeting, what are the most important things to you in leading a meeting? And do you think any of those are in the way of you being more clear? Like, for instance, I've noticed, again, you would have to actually have noticed this, but if I was in a coaching session and I was reflecting with a person, I might say, I've noticed that you feel like you kind of have to hurry through the agenda items. And it seems like that's when you might lose some of your more precise language. Is that true? Do you feel that? And then, see, now we're having a conversation, right? We're opening up a conversation, or I might say, we're opening up a reflective space where I'm going to share a little and the other person's going to share a little. And we're going to talk about this issue on the table for improvement. And you slow down a little bit. And the reason you slow down is that even our brains get in a different spot, a different position when we slow down and we allow a more reflective posture to emerge. More insights are likely to occur in those kinds of moments than when we're just plowing through the hallway, you know, nudging people. So you slow down and you reflect, and it's not all about you as the, quote, coach doing all the talking, but, you know, you're just opening up a conversational space, and you want the person to talk and to see if you can reach insights together. That's what you're really looking for in the reflective space is, are there any insights that could emerge that would be good for the person to consider or work on? And that would lead to the second part, designing a process by which the person could work on change. So let's keep with our example. Yeah, you know, this is the person responding now. You know, I do rush through. You're right. Man, I never thought of that, but now I'm thinking back and I really do rush through the agenda. I guess I feel like I don't want to waste people's time and I want to honor that, you know, that we start on time and end on time. And I think I'm just rushing through. And now I might say, well, wow, what do you think we could put in place that could help you overcome that or get better at slowing down? I don't really know. Well, let's think about it a little bit. Now we're going to get into a design for some kind of an improvement process. And I mean, look, this could be as simple as, you know, next time you're in a meeting, why don't you write on the top of the agenda? Only you can see it, but why don't you write, slow down? Slow down. Or do you have a general sense of how long agenda items are going to take? Do you think you could write an agenda out that maybe has a little more precision to the time? You know, you're going to give this agenda item 10 minutes and this one 15 and this one 20. And then you know that you can slow down in the midst of that and speed up when you need to. Slow down and speed up according to where you are in the agenda. Or do you think maybe you have too many things on the agenda? Could you work on creating a more realistic agenda? Now, so in the design, what you're first trying to find, right, is a place to intervene. A place that if the person intervened in their behavior could make a difference, could help them improve in whatever it is that they're trying to get better at. So in the example I gave, I'm trying to help the person intervene, if you will, in a way that will slow them down and allow them to have a bit more presence attached to their leading of the meeting so that they're not just rushing through. I don't know what those strategies would be. They would come from the coaching session. Maybe sometimes they would come pretty simply, easily, and other times we might have to dig around a little bit. But what you're looking for in the design are 1 to 3 action strategies the person can leave and try and experiment with. And maybe even a couple of results or outcomes that the person could look for to know if those strategies that you designed worked. Now, look, I have a tool that, you know, I use with people and it's something I would be willing to share with all of you who are listening to this, a document that walks people through a coaching session that gets to the heart of some of these things. And there are lots of coaching methodologies that get to the heart of design. And so you might want a template, a flexible template that helps you get to design elements. Or you might just be able to come up with them, you know, in a conversation and then say, hey, why don't you email me back the 2 or 3 changes you're going to make in your actions so I can know what they are and then we can talk about them the next time we get together. Now, then finally, the support phase of this actually probably runs through the whole thing, but it's where you really convey in word and deed, you convey your support for this person's improvement. Just having the conversation at one level conveys that support, but at another level, you might suggest resources to them, or you might supply resources. You know, for example, you could say, you know who's really good at slowing down and articulating a meeting is Jane. Jane seems to do this really good. I'll tell you what. Would you like to watch Jane lead a meeting? I know you're not usually in meetings with her, but I could arrange that. And it would be really simple to do, and you wouldn't look out of place in the meeting. And you could just watch how she leads a meeting and how she speeds up and slows down and how she brings clarity to certain points. I think that would be a really good thing for you. Now, see, that could be part of the design, but it's also you telegraphing your support. Or you might say, I want to come to your next meeting, and I want to watch. And then let's talk about it afterward. Now, you know, you can't do that all the time because you've got a lot of things going. That's why using other people as resources in those situations are good. You could also suggest, hey, I read this article, you know, or I listened to this podcast by this Dave Fleming guy, or I read this Harvard Business Review article on how to convey ideas in meetings, and I'm going to send it to you. So in some way, you are trying to convey that you are supporting the efforts of the change, of the improvement process that the person or the team is going through. So when you sit down for a coaching session, you're slowing down a bit and you're trying to get to the heart of reflecting about the idea, designing a simple set of actions that the person can start to take to try to alter their behavior so it improves, and how they might be able to tell if it's working. And then you're trying to support them by both showing your support verbally, but by attaching them, connecting them to resources that can help them. Of course, we could spend hours and hours and sessions on coaching. That's not what this is about, but I want to just share in this particular segment, keep those three elements in your coaching conversations, in your coaching sessions, and you'll find that those coaching sessions yield more fruit. Of course, then you have to follow up. One last thing, by the way, or two, I guess, follow-up is one. You got to come back to these coaching sessions and talk about them. And so that's why frequency and consistency are important. But coaching sessions are also the way then to nudge people later, right? That's how this whole example started. We used this as a nudge. We were walking down the hallway, and I saw you going to a meeting, and I nudged you with, hey, you know, make sure you're articulate or make sure you slow down. Well, how did I know to say that to you? I knew to say that to you because of our coaching session. So that's why coaching sessions become the material that get you into nudges in a real-time moment. Coaching sessions are important. Yes, they're costly from a time perspective, but man, the return on them, can, if they're consistent and frequent, can be high. All right, the third conversational strategy is corrective action. And I am talking very specifically here about when performance goes south. And that can sometimes happen in a moment. Someone does something egregious enough that you have to deal with it in a corrective way. Or it can kind of be disintegrating over time, and you've tried to nudge and coach and it hasn't worked, and now you're going to have to move to corrective action. So when I say correcting, I'm talking about more in a formal HR kind of way, where you're going to have to move to a step where now this becomes about eliminating inappropriate behavior. And that is a ginormous distinction I want to make between nudging, coaching, and correcting. And here's the distinction. Nudging and coaching should always be about increasing performance, making performance better, whether that performance is above or below some standard norm. In too many organizations, the only time people ever get talked to or coached is if they're not performing at some baseline standard. In fact, in some organizations, the very word performance is negative. In some organizations, when you get a performance improvement plan, it means you're in trouble. Oh my gosh, I cannot believe an organization would use a word like performance to mean something negative. So I want to draw a distinction here that nudging and coaching should always be about and be framed as improving performance. Whether that performance is above or below some standard norm of practice in the organization, you want to talk about and frame in your culture that, hey, we talk about and have coaching sessions about improvement because we believe in improvement. It's a positive thing. When we talk about your performance, you're not in trouble. This is something we all do together. Now, of course, if you don't do that, you can't say that. But it's where you want your culture to go. You want performance conversations to be positive. And sometimes those performance conversations or nudges are about performance that's below a norm, and sometimes the conversation is about performance that is above the norm. It's okay to coach for people who are below the norm, to coach them above that sort of standard line of practice. And it's also okay to coach people who are above the norm. Too often, people who are doing well in an organization are just ignored. Whew, glad you're not a problem. I don't have to coach you. Wow, what a waste. Make nudging and coaching all about positive increase of performance. Now, when you get to correcting, as in corrective action, now the conversation switches to eliminating inappropriate organizational behavior. That's the line here. Anything below correcting, nudging and coaching, those should always be framed as positive. Positive, facilitative moments to increase performance. But when you get to correcting, not that it has to be framed as negative, but it needs to be framed as, we've moved into a different space right now, and now this is about me having to have a conversation with you about eliminating some kind of inappropriate behavior that is not aligned with our organization. So when it comes to correcting, I want to make just a few broad statements, because I want to be careful here, because for most people listening to this, your organization has probably rather prescribed ways you have to go through corrective action, and I don't want to say anything that would get in the way of or counter the processes or procedures that are important to your organization's way of handling corrective action. But I will just make a few comments here. One, I would suggest that when you move into corrective action, you need to switch your tone and demeanor. The whole thing needs to be, it doesn't mean you're rude or mean or harsh, but I like to use the word sober. I like to also use the phrase, bring a resolute presence with you, so that people sense a difference between a conversation about corrective action and coaching and nudging. That there's a difference. That something shifts in you and in your resolute presence about it. And that can just be as simple as, Jared, I need to have a conversation with you now about your performance and your work, because I'm going to give you a verbal warning. Let's say you do those in your organization. Or we're going to enter corrective action. And I'm sorry we have to do this, but you're now demonstrating a behavior that is not appropriate in our organization. And I hope we can remedy this quickly and remedy it for good. But it's important you hear that what we're going to talk about is not optional. This behavior has to stop. Now, you see, I wasn't rude or harsh, But even notice the tone I took was different. So when you move into corrective action, you can still support the person. You can still even help think about design of the way out, although HR might have some thoughts about that too. But you do want to share and position it with, again, what I call a sober and resolute presence. With your resolute presence, let me say two things about the process of corrective action. Again, I'm not going to get into the particulars because I don't want to step on your organization's methodology and policies around this. But two things that are universal, no matter what that process is in your organization. One, don't go it alone. Don't go corrective action alone. In larger, more formal organizations, HR will play a role in this, and so you probably automatically can't go it alone unless you don't inform them until it's totally collapsing and you're trying to do corrective action on your own, just not in a formal way. Not a good idea, because there are so many emotional spots where you can step in the quicksand when you're trying to do corrective action, because now you're into a much more vulnerable place, vulnerable for you, vulnerable for the person, and the dynamics get a lot more tricky. Don't go it alone. Whatever the process is that you work, make sure you work it with someone else. If you don't have a formal HR team that helps with this, then pull a trusted colleague or supervisor in with you. But you don't want to go it alone, or you get too quickly into areas where accusations can be made. He said, she said, whatever the configuration is, and you don't want that. You want to protect yourself, but you also want to protect the person that you're going to be working with, and you want to make sure that there's an outside governor, if you will, that's not so enmeshed in the process like you and the person who you'll be working with. The second thing about the process, so number one, don't go it alone. The second thing about it is follow through. The worst thing that can happen is that you set up a corrective action process and you don't work it. Once you have the plan, make sure you follow through with that plan. I've seen people, leaders, get excited because someone early on in a corrective action process makes a change, and so they just stop. They just say, oh, well, you've changed. Don't do that either. Work the plan all the way through the plan. And while you're working that plan all the way to conclusion, keep your resolute presence when you're working it. And then, you know, if the plan yields that the person isn't progressing the way they need to, then you're going to have to move to another level of corrective action. Or maybe that's the final level, and now you're going to have to think about termination or something else more dramatic. But make sure that you work the plan through the plan all the way to the completion of the plan, so that then you can either restore the person or move on to the next level of corrective action, whatever that is, whatever that is. But if you restore the person, which is always the hope, at least it should be, you shouldn't go through the corrective action process, I mean, unless you're just trying to cover yourself and you want to fire the person. But if you really want the person to turn around, that should be your goal when you go into corrective action. I get that it's not always the goal, that you're doing it to create a paper trail so you can let someone go. But man, as long as the person's around and if you're in a corrective action process, then the goal ought to be to restore them. And so if they make it, then restore them. Don't make them wear a mark. Restore them and remove your sober and resolute presence. And and get back to, quote, the normals, if you will, where you're back to nudging and coaching. So with regard to the process, don't go it alone and work it to the end. And then whatever the end yields, you take that next step. But if it's restoration, then restore and celebrate and move on. So these three conversational strategies can really create a process you can use to generate and facilitate continuous improvement and thinking about higher performance with your team or in your organization. Nudges are these everyday little tic-tacs that we hand people to either put them back on a right track or the track you've decided is important, or to push them to a higher level of performance. Coaching is a bit slower conversation where we reflect, we design, and we support. And then we draw a line there and we say, above that, when we get to corrective action, we're now shifting out of something that we always want to convey as positive. Nudging and coaching are always positive. Correcting, it's not that it's negative, but it's shifted to another place, a different place of improvement, because now it's not about improving performance to enhance it, but it's about improving performance to eliminate inappropriate organizational behavior. Nudge, coach, correct. If you can deliberately find the places where you can start to do these, especially the first two, where you can start to do these conversational strategies on a consistent, frequent, deliberate basis, you will see not only improvement in individuals, but on the team, because you'll start to create a culture. It may take 6-9 months, but you'll start to create a culture where people want to get better. And you can't be a high-performing team if you're made up of a lot of people who don't care about being better. That doesn't work. High-performing teams are diligent and vigilant and religious about wanting to up their game in important ways. And this program is about the three strategies that can help you facilitate that with your team. Nudge, coach, and correct. Give it a try, but don't start it if you can't sustain it. Start it at a pace you can sustain and that you can do in a deliberative fashion. And I wish you the best as you increase the ingenuity and performance and effectiveness of your team through these strategies. This is Dave Fleming in the Ingenuity Lab.